Alright, what is up everybody? Thank you for tuning in to episode 9 of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And as for one time, I'm recording in a closet.
Closet or no. Good show for you as always. We're going to get into Manny Machado and the Dodgers a little bit. And kind of just... Is Manny Machado a dirty player or not? We'll get into that a little bit later. Then after that, there's some exciting opportunities for basketball athletes that want to avoid playing in college at all in the G League. And then we're going to wrap it up with three NBA storylines that Ant and I are looking forward to this season, as the season did in fact start, and most of the teams have one or two games under their belt. So without further ado, we're going to get going into Manny Machado. I think as you all saw, probably, Manny Machado dragged his foot into the ankle of Jesus Aguilar, the Milwaukee Brewers first baseman, and then the bench is cleared, and it's incited a lot of negative reaction towards Manny Machado. Christian Yelich, for example, after the game, was quoted saying, "A dirty play by a dirty player." And this is not Manny Machado's first instance with this. I mean, what's your take on it?
Well, first of all, yeah, it was unnecessary. It was a dirty play, but as far as making him a dirty player, I'm not so sure about that. I mean, like, Manny Machado is a dickhead. Like, that's just common knowledge at this point. Like, with all the stuff he did in Baltimore, specifically, like, when his backswing would hit catchers in the glove and helmet and stuff. I don't know. He just always does, like, those little things. I mean, this specific instance... is worse than others, I guess I would say, just because he intentionally did it. It wasn't for any gain or anything, because there was no chance of him being safe. So, I mean, he just did it to do it. So, it's definitely foul, but I don't necessarily think that makes him that one specific instance, and then the little ones that kind of have compiled up make him a dirty player overall, I guess I'd say.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just can't. Obviously, yes, the other instances are smaller. They're not as blatantly obvious as this situation. But I mean, little or not, I mean, they just kind of start to stack up. I was researching it last night, and just some of the major ones that he's been involved with are his brawl with the late Yordano Ventura. A few years ago, when he was drilled by a pitch and then immediately threw his bat down and started going out there to fight him. That's not like a dirty player. That's like, you got hit, you felt like you got hit on purpose and you got beef, so fine. That I'm totally cool with, but still it's inciting a brawl. He's had a couple instances of slides into second. One earlier in the series. That one earlier in the series that was already called, that already called Manny Machado's play style into question, and that was in Game 3. Now, he's also had other instances of sliding, like when he lunged pretty much at Xander Bogaerts' knees the first year that the new slide rule was in effect. In 2017, he also slid into Dustin Pedroia's leg and cleated him, and he had to leave the game. He was then drilled later in the game. And then in 2014, I don't know if you mentioned this or not, when he threw his bat basically at the third baseman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, I don't know. That's a weird play, just because it's kind of like you look at him like, what are you doing? But, I mean, one way or another, Manny Machado is an incredibly talented player and things like that, but when you keep finding yourself in situations like these, I mean, it's difficult, but Manny Machado is a dirty player. He just is. That doesn't take away from any of the things he can do on the field. In fact, I think that he's really propelling the Dodgers to take command of this series. I mean, they were down 2-1, and now they're up 3-2. And whether Machado wants to hustle or not, he's still having a positive impact on the series. So yeah, that's kind of my disagreement.
I guess I don't really look at it as he's a dirty player. Like, the one line you mentioned that, like, I kind of get behind is the, dude, what are you doing? Like, that's kind of, I guess, how I see it.
Yeah.
I guess I'd say I guess I'd classify it as, like, a dirty player doing things dirty to benefit them and to try to, like, get an edge or something. But, like, all the stuff he's done is just, like, childish things that really had no effect on anything, really. Like, Alex Rodriguez, for example, that one play where he tried to slap the ball out of Branson Arroyo's glove when he was tagging him on the first baseline. Like, that's a dirty play. But at least if he didn't do it so obviously, he would have gained something from it. He would have been safe. But, like, the stuff Manny Machado does is just childish, pretty much. I feel like once he matures a little bit, because he's still pretty young, so, I mean, once he matures, I definitely think he'll stop doing all that stuff.
You'd hope. And,
yeah, you'd hope. But, yeah, I don't necessarily see it as dirty, just unnecessary, stupid, childish, idiotic, all that stuff.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I mean, kind of like that Milton Bradley kind of vibe where, like, obviously Machado's much more talented and polarizing of a player than Milton Bradley, but, I mean, he had, like, one good year and then kind of – and then the world kind of saw what a child Milton Bradley was. I mean, hopefully, like you said, he's young, so hopefully that doesn't become Machado's path. He was fined an undisclosed amount by the MLB for the – foot dragging, despite him denying it. I don't know.
I don't know how you could deny that, dude.
Yeah, I like, a couple days after. Yeah, like a couple days after saying I'm not the kind of player that hustles, and then he basically said like, I was trying to draw, or I was like running to first base. And I was trying to get my foot over his leg, but I couldn't. If that's a dirty play, then that's a dirty play. And I mean, I don't know. That just cracks me up. We've been over that, but
it's silly, dude. I guess something else that I came across when I was like looking this up and researching it a little bit was this article claiming that he could be costing himself. Himself and others a bunch of money in free agency. So like pretty much it said every time he does something like that, he's taking off millions of dollars off his potential free agency signing, which I thought was pretty bogus. I mean, the guy's going to get paid either way on any team. If you have a chance to get someone like Manny Machado, you're going to pay whatever you can to get him. So I just thought that was kind of dumb.
No, I mean, that's actually, I'm glad you said that, because that's exactly where I wanted to segue to, was would it have an impact on his free agency? And so Manny Machado's 26 years old, he's going to be a free agent for the first time. Him and Bryce Harper are both going to be free agents. Bryce Harper's coming off a down year, but he's still going to sign a monster contract, I guess down year average-wise. And Manny Machado, you could argue, is also kind of coming off a down year in terms of, at least of on and off the field stuff and being traded. And so, I mean, they're both going to set the market. They're going to sign massive deals worth hundreds of millions of dollars. And I agree with you completely. Whether or not Manny Machado is a dirty player, it's irrelevant because he's a 23-year-old or 26-year-old superstar that is on the free agent market, and every single team that has the opportunity is going to try and sign him. I mean, now if you're a team that's stacked, obviously the Houston Astros probably aren't going to go after Manny Machado, but I don't think as much as I do think he is a dirty player, I just knowing the business of the MLB, I don't think that it's going to really impact his free agency all that much.
Yeah, the only way I can see it impacting his free agency is like contenders or teams with like that carry themselves a certain way. Like, I guess I'd say like the Yankees or Red Sox. Yeah. I could see them maybe shying away from signing him, but I mean, that's still not going to take away from him getting his $250 million somewhere else.
Yeah, well, I mean, as much as I wanted to say the Yankees too, I just don't remember them shying away from a big name free agent all that often. I mean, they are they are loaded with Gleyber Torres and Andujar and Gregorius still, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just maybe, like, yeah. Just those type of teams with a certain pedigree to them.
Yeah,
that wouldn't necessarily want that ruining their image, but. Like I said, other than that, I mean, who's going to get $250 million somewhere?
Yeah, so. I agree. So at least we agreed on one half of that. So we got the – I still think he's a dirty player, but, you know, at least we know he's getting paid one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Manny Machado, dirty or not, you kind of got to decide for yourself. I mean, we've laid out the facts for you, but he is going to get paid and – we're going to stop talking about him. Dodgers, I think, and we can just say this last little bit here. Boston's already on their way to the series. The Dodgers came back to take a 3-2 lead in the Milwaukee series. Are they going to hold on? Are they going to be playing the Red Sox yet?
I don't know, because everything I said went wrong already. I think the Dodgers will hold on, though. Just the way they played, they've won two straight. And I don't know, Milwaukee just kind of looks defeated a little bit. Christian Yelich isn't playing how he was, his MVP caliber. And the Dodgers superstars are all playing top. I wouldn't say all, but they're playing pretty top level. So it's kind of hard to stop them when they're on.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the experience that I had talked about when the Dodgers were, like, the Dodgers have been there before. Milwaukee was playing hot. Milwaukee was scorching hot. They were blazing. Like, they went through the Cubs. They got up 2-1 on the Dodgers. And so, I mean, the difference is Clayton Kershaw had a terrible game. He's had plenty of those in the playoffs before. So, I mean, I guess this is kind of like a maturation process of he bounces back and he brings the Dodgers back. He brought the Dodgers back to 3-2 last night. So I think it's kind of Milwaukee got punched in the face, and we're going to see if they have what it takes to bounce back after just playing real hot. And I'm not sure they do, but I know that the Dodgers do, and they've already showed it. So I'm expecting to see the Dodgers in the series just like hey.
Yeah, I mean, I could see Milwaukee maybe pushing it to 7, but with the Dodgers' experience and everything like you said, I feel like they'll take game 7 if it gets to that.
I agree as well. So looking like that'll do it for our MLB segment. From here, I'm gonna let Ant take the reins on this, but it is the G League introducing a professional path deal. You wanna get us going?
Yeah, so this G League deal is claiming to offer elite prospects $125,000 to go ahead and not go to college for that one and done and play in the G League, which is, for those who don't know, like the NBA's minor league system pretty much. So it's not like a JBA type thing where a lot of these college players are getting paid, like all these random dudes are getting paid. It's going to be only like top prospects, like that are ranked like top 100. I mean, even if it goes down that far, I doubt it'll go down that far. But it is setting, I think it's really good for each party, honestly. Like, although it's taking away from the NCAA talent-wise, I feel like it puts a little bit more narrative back into the NCAA seasons with the NCAA tournaments. Because, like, back in the day when players were staying, like, 2, 3, 4 years, if they lost in the NCAA tournament, they would have a chance at redemption and stuff. So I think that's something missing now since everybody's just one and done. And, like, the only schools that are constantly getting there are schools that have those players that are staying 2, 3, 4 years. And it's good for the NBA, too, because top prospects that are ready for the NBA aren't going to be held back and have the chance of injury before they even get to the NBA. So that's my little intro, I guess, if you want to take it from here.
Yeah, no, I mean, so there's a lot of big pieces to come out of this. I mean, for one, it's you have to see that it's in direct response to the outcry about the one and done rule. Colleges do not like it, and players don't like it. Players will take it because it's their quickest route to the NBA. But I mean, it's the one and done rule. Is, like you said, it's changing narratives in college. I mean, the guys that get the top-ranked McDonald's All-Americans are the guys that end up having, a lot of times, the playoff runs. So, I mean, but these players are, like you said, they're risking injury. They can't sign deals. They can't have an agent. They're not getting paid at all. Basically because the NBA draft eligibility is until they're 19. Until they're 12 months removed. So, I mean, this is a big response to that. And so, I mean, that's kind of one piece. Another thing, like you said, there's going to be a transference of talent. I mean, whether it's... I personally don't really think that it's going to take away a ton of top talent from bigger schools, at least, in the NCAA. Obviously, there will be some, but I mean, I think the kind of allure of playing for a college championship in big stadiums with nice facilities and things like that, as opposed to the G League, sometimes playing in small gyms, taking the bus, like you said, it's like a minor league affiliate. So, I mean, that's another thing that these players got to consider. Yeah, they're getting straight to the league. Yes, they can sign an agent and a marketing deal, but if they're not already a household name, signing a marketing deal and an agent doesn't help you a ton right out of the gates. And yeah, you're getting paid, but I mean, it's still not very much, and you're living a travel life, and you have to, at 18 years old, you're not on a team, or like you're not drafted, so you don't have the support of an entire NBA organization. So, I mean, that's a thing where it's like you'll have to hold yourself accountable and be responsible. And these 18-year-olds are going to be expected to do that, playing in small gyms, bussing around. So, I mean, I don't know. Those are a couple things that kind of interest and concern me. And then, I mean, I guess my last thing would be that it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the contracts can be worth up to $125,000. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where these contracts settle in amongst the G League guy, or amongst these guys that'll be joining the G League. Is it going to be a lot of $125,000 contracts? Is it getting a lot of big prospects? Or is it going to be a lot of, like, middle-of-the-road guys that think maybe they have a chance but know they won't succeed in school?
Yeah, I think kind of touching on that point, I think it's going to give a lot of prospects a sense of reality. Like, with this one-and-done rule, a lot of players they leave college prematurely to enter the NBA draft and whatever. But I think this will give them a sense of reality in terms of where they're actually at talent-wise and if they're actually NBA ready, because if they take the G League deal, and these aren't, like, the G League players aren't bums. Like, they're really good players.
They're top prospects, yeah, usually, so, for the actual NBA teams.
Yeah, and if they can't handle it there, they'll have to reassess their talents in terms of development, too. So I think it'll also go into the 2-3-4 year guys. I think it'll create more of those because prospects will see these guys not being able to develop the way they should be because they wanted to rush to the league. And I mean, not everybody's a guy that could go straight to the league. Like, you have to be like a freak of nature, like LeBron, Dwight Howard, Ben Simmons could have, Zion Williamson maybe, but like, it's not a lot. There's not a lot of players that can just make the leap from high school to the NBA or even just straight to the G League. So, I mean, it'll give a lot of players a sense of reality on where their talents are and where their development needs to be and stuff like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So, I mean, I think at the very least it's going to create more 3-4 year guys at bigger schools, just because, I mean, this will be viewed as an option to skip out on school, to immediately have an agent. So, like, Zion Williams, or is it Williamson or Williamson?
Yeah, Williamson.
Williamson, yeah. The amount of buzz that dude's already created through social media and his dunks and things like that, if he did this, he'd probably sign with like Nike or something,
yeah,
right out of the bat, and there'd be Zion t-shirts and like, I mean, that's a guy that could take full advantage of something like this, mainly because he would sign with an agent immediately in marketing deals, and that would then turn that $125,000 into sponsorships and cash flow. But in that same breath, obviously, if you're a no-name guy, you're not getting signed. Yeah. But there's like top prospects or top college prospects that aren't freak athletes like Zion, and don't have the buzz, but they'll still be good enough to get signed. It's just they'll have to. You'll really have to. These college players are really going to have to make, like, this is going to be a big decision. Am I good enough for this, or do I need to develop more? Like you're saying, the one thing I'm kind of curious about, I guess, maybe you can at least give me your perspective. If they sign a G League contract like this and say it doesn't work out, they struggle or realize they're not ready, what's their path back to the collegiate game if they wanted to? Or do you think that they just have to play out in the G League?
Yeah, I think they have to play it out because, like, the NCAA is built on amateurism, I guess. And so once they forfeit their amateurism and go pro, I don't think they could really go back. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's kind of how it goes.
I feel like you're right. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, that sucks, but I guess that makes sense, though. But, I mean, that's another, like, that's a risk, you know? Yeah,
that's like, what I'm saying. It'll give them a reality check.
Yeah. It's tough. But, I mean, I guess I'm talking here like it being a risk. Like the getting drafted straight out of high school isn't a risk. Mm-hmm. But I guess I would argue, though, that it's a little bit less of a risk.
Yeah.
Just because when you get drafted, you're not on the team, but you're pretty likely to make the team, or at the very least they're going to send you to their G League affiliate.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going to get $1 million at least either way, most likely, unless you're like a later first round, second round pick. And I mean, you'll get at least one contract while you're in the NBA, probably too. So.
Yeah, so I mean, the draft obviously has a much safer financially and arguably developmentally path than this G League opportunity will. I guess we have to wait and see. I mean, maybe they'll handle it really well, and these players will actually be developed and drafted or signed. So, would they get drafted? I guess that's another question. Out of the G League, or would they just sign?
I feel like they would just sign, honestly.
Yeah.
And then just get called up whenever.
So, I mean, I guess that's another thing that I would say would deter some of the top prospects, because if they can't get drafted in this route, then they can't be the number one overall pick and get number one overall pick money.
Yeah, that's true.
But one way or another, I think it's a really good step forward. At least, I mean, Adam Silver was talking about how much the one-and-done rule was discussed. And so I think, like I said in the very beginning of this segment, this is a step in that direction. And so, I mean, or a step, not step in that direction, it's a step in response to the one-and-done rule and all the things going on with that. So I would say this is going to just be another stone kind of thrown into that debate. And quite frankly, I could see the one-and-done rule going away. Maybe not exactly in response to this, but I mean, this just piling, the G League rule or deal just piling up on other pleas to get rid of the one-and-done rule, because like I said in the beginning as well, colleges, big colleges and college coaches are starting to say they don't want these one-and-done players
mm-hmm.
because they don't have a chance to build team chemistry. I mean, 1 year with a player is not enough time to develop leadership and team chemistry and things like that. So, I mean, I understand where he's coming from. And so I guess that's kind of my prediction, I guess, stemming from this, is that we're going to see the one-and-done rule done away with here in the next few years.
Yeah, I could definitely see that, too. Like you're saying, I mean, it definitely puts the college coaches don't like it as much anymore, since, I mean, you do get a guy with a lot of good talent, but what's all that talent for 1 year?
So, yeah.
I mean, team built on one-and-dones don't really win anything. Like, I think it was, like, the 2015 Duke team with Jahlil Okafor and Justice Winslow. It was, like, one of the only teams to, like, win it with a team full of one-and-dones, so.
Yeah. I we're in agreement there. It's usually the teams that maybe have a one and done guy that's like spearheading their attack, but then they also have a lot of, like, they have third years and seniors and guys that are, I mean, they're the superstars, and then there's the program guys, the guys mm-hmm. that everybody loves, that the coaches will talk their heads off about because he's been there for 4 years just working hard.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I'm not slighting any of these guys, but it's there.
Oh, yeah. When you have a chance to secure the bag.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you got anything else on the G League?
Nah, I'm ready to move forward.
All right, cool. So with that, we'll get into our last and probably our funnest, most fun segment. It's our NBA storylines. There sure is a lot of them this year. I mean, I spent most of my time researching yesterday trying to figure out which storyline I wanted to pick. So, I mean, I'm definitely excited for this NBA year, whether the Warriors are going to win the finals again or not.
Yeah.
You want to get us going with your first storyline, Ant?
Yeah, I guess so. My first one, I'll save my favorite one for last. My first one is Anthony Davis and the New Orleans Pelicans and how far he's going to take them. Are they going to build on last year where they finished with the 6th seed and were only a couple games out from finishing with the 3 seed? Or are they going to regress and get a 7th, 8th, or even miss the playoffs? I think this storyline will go hand in hand with the MVP storyline, I think, too, since AD's definitely in the running for that. And if he could carry the Pelicans to anything over like a 5th seed, I think he'd definitely be a lock for MVP too. So, I mean, those two go hand in hand, and also they'll go a long way in determining where AD will be at the end of his contract when it expires too. Like, his team now isn't as bad as it has been He has a pretty decent team built around him. Drew Holiday's really good. They have really good role players. Obviously not going to make a title run or anything, but they definitely have what it takes to kind of push it and get a higher level seed.
Yeah, so Anthony Davis, I mean, I'm sure you can guess, was one of the ones that I was debating as putting in here. I mean, for me, it was less about, like, his actual season progression, because I know he's going to play great. I know he's going to play at an MVP level. And, I mean, the way the MVP trophy has been awarded the last few years, it's kind of been like a revolving door. Like, all right, you got yours, you got yours, you got yours. Now, I mean, it has. But I think it might. I mean, this is where the MVP, I think, is going to get tricky. Is, are the Bucks going to do better, or are the Pelicans going to do better? And I could see either Giannis or AD winning MVP this year. AD puts up MVP like numbers every year, and it seems like in the second half he just decides to pony up and put Drew Holiday on his back and drag him to the playoffs. But like you said, there's a lot riding on the whole season. And so my thought process on it was less about how he's going to do, because I knew he's going to do well, and more if the team doesn't do well, where's he going?
Yeah.
They've already said that if they struggled, then they would consider trading Anthony Davis. And so, I mean, I don't know. A lot of the speculations on Anthony Davis becoming a Laker if they struggle. So, I mean, that's a storyline to watch right there, is possibly seeing Anthony Davis and LeBron James. I mean, that...
Yeah, that'd be dope.
That would be insane. But, yeah. So, I mean, that's a good one to watch for sure. I definitely wanted to put it in my top three, but, I mean... I'll get right into one of mine. I mean, it's just kind of obligatory. I had to put it in, just being a Rockets fan and all. But I mean, it's Carmelo Anthony. I get for me. I mean, does he fit with the Rockets, and B, like, how does he fit? Is it a positive or is it a negative impact? I mean, we all know how bad he was last year. He shot 40% from the field and showed he could not play with Paul George and Russell Westbrook. Barely played in the playoffs. The Rockets are coming off being one game from dethroning the Warriors.
Yeah.
And they've now lost Luke Mbamute and Trevor Ariza, who are both good defensive players who are lacking a little offensively. Ariza is a great spot up guy for sure, but I mean, that's about where his offensive value ended in Houston. But those minutes are now going to get replaced by the likes of like James Ennis and Carmelo Anthony. James Ennis is obviously a better defender than Carmelo Anthony. So is a well-placed trash can. Now, don't get me wrong. Carmelo Anthony can't play defense. He has the skill set to be able to make up for that on offense. He's coming off the bench for the first time in his career, I believe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's another thing to keep an eye on, is how is he going to fit. But basically what it comes down to is I got to watch and see, is this guy, the same guy that's in the same draft class as LeBron James and Dwayne Wade, is he going to be a negative impact for the team that finished with the best record in the West last year? Or is he going to offset the defensive losses with positive offensive contributions? I mean, if game one's any indication, he's going to be a negative, which, I mean, obviously it's a one game sample. I'm not playing on that, but I don't know. That's something I just have to watch being a Rockets fan, is Melo, is he going to fit?
Yeah, I think ultimately I feel like he will end up fitting decently. Obviously, you can't really make up on the defensive end with Melo when you lose Trevor Ariza. But him coming off the bench is a big sign. And the Rockets can't, they could use that offense off the bench. I mean, I feel like he's definitely in the running for Sixth Man of the Year if he continues to come off the bench. And that's pretty much all, like, not all the Rockets need, but it's a lot of what they need. So I think he'll end up fitting pretty good if he keeps his ego in check, which he has up until this point.
Yeah, and so, yeah, the Rockets, really, you can't put them in the starting lineup because then you have the defensive negatives of Harden and Carmelo. So, I mean, you can't. If Eric Gordon's in the starting lineup, yes, Melo definitely has a chance to win Sixth Man if he steps in and does well in Mike D'Antoni's offense, which I think a lot of people believe is really one of the last places Melo could actually succeed right now. So it's definitely going to be interesting to watch. He's saying all the right things. He's willing to come off the bench. He just wants to win. He's on a minimum contract. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Well, I guess, I'll get into my second storyline. It's kind of basic. It's who will run the East. I feel like we definitely have three-ish teams that could realistically run the East. Obviously, the Boston Celtics are a step ahead of everybody else. But the Raptors with Kawhi, I feel like, can actually not dethrone the Celtics because they're not on the throne yet, but can beat them anyway, I guess I would say. And then the Bucks too, like you were saying, if Giannis ends up taking that next step and does play at an MVP level, and eventually if he does win it, if he's playing at that level, I feel like the Bucks could also take out the Celtics. So that's just something to look out there in the out East.
Yeah, so it's a little broad, I guess, but I mean, I think it's a good storyline to watch.
Yeah.
It's the first time LeBron's gone for 13 years, however many. 15 years, huh? Because he was drafted in, like, 2003, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. But,
yeah, realistically, only, like, 13 years. He's really been in, like, the running, though, for having a good team and stuff. So.
And, I mean, like, it was 8 finals in a row. So, yeah. I mean, it's I guess, like, 2010.
Yeah.
2011 was the last time LeBron let anybody else go to the finals. So he's gone for the first time in a long time, which means that the East is open. LeBron showed us last year that in the East, it really didn't matter what team he had. He was going to get to the finals. Boston's health probably played a role in that, but it's wide open with the upper echelon teams. You've got Boston, Toronto,
Sixers too. I forgot to mention
that. Sixers, yeah. I was going to touch on it. But, I mean, Joel Embiid said to himself, it's not a rivalry with the Celtics because they always kick our ass. So, I mean, it's that sucks to hear your best player say that. But, I mean, he's not really wrong. The Celtics just kind of overwhelmed them every time they play with their suffocating defense. So, for me... That storyline's going to be a great one to watch, but for me, it's between the Raptors and the Celtics. Until I see something happen to the 76ers, then it's... Or a Giannis step up. Less of a Giannis step up and more like his teammates step up. But, it's Raptors... Raptors C's for me right now.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I still feel like the Sixers still have, like, another year or two before they've matured enough to contend for a title. They don't have the same culture that the Celtics do with their young players. Jason Tatum's already playing. Like, he's been a pro for 10 years. So, that's definitely something that the Celtics have over them that you can't really replace unless it's with time.
Yeah, you can't replace the experience and veteran presence that Boston has had since all those young guys have come in. I mean, they've pretty much last couple years, anybody that's in that organization has been paired up with either a superstar or like a good veteran, like Horford, Irving, the Morris, whatever Morris brothers on their team.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so I mean, I'll get into my next storyline. It's tough because I have a segue either way here. I guess because we're going more team oriented, I'll go with my Kawhi Leonard storyline. It's his first time actually playing healthy for like the first time in 2 years, basically. Obviously, everyone still believes that he's a top five player when healthy. If he's healthy and back to the form he was prior to him missing all this time, he's probably the best player in the East now. Right now. Complete game. I want to be careful saying that about with Giannis in there and Embiid and Simmons coming up. But, I mean, complete player, if healthy, it's probably Kawhi Leonard. I mean, he's going to average 25 a game and play the best defense in the East. So, I mean, if he's healthy, the Raptors basically replaced DeMar DeRozan with two more lengthy wings and a guy that can defend any position.
Yeah, for sure.
And be your number one efficiently. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's, I guess, like, the kind of things that I'm going to look forward to this, or look for in this season out of Kawhi is, how does he do his first season without Popovich?
Yeah.
It's a first-year NBA head coach in Toronto, Nick Nurse. I mean, if you kept Dwayne Casey, which I understand, I guess, why you had to fire him, just because he could never really bring home the gold. But you hire a first-time NBA head coach, and Nick Nurse is, I mean, there's positive things about him, but he's not Greg Popovich. And so, I mean, that kind of just makes me lean into how good can the Raptors be with no Pop, a Kawhi Leonard with no Popovich, hasn't played in 2 years. I mean, on night one, he went off, so that kind of puts some worries to rest, but I think it's still going to be a process learning a new system. And so, I mean, how good can the Raptors actually be with a really solid depth on their team and now at an actual superstar? And could they be good enough, or could Toronto be enticing enough to keep Kawhi Leonard there after this year?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely, I feel like the Raptors, if they're healthy, if they stay healthy throughout the whole season, they're easily a lock for a top three seed, if not top two. But I guess my interest in the storyline is more what's going to happen after the season. Is Kawhi going to stay? Is he going to leave? He said when he first got traded to Toronto, like, no matter what, he wasn't going to stay. But he's definitely warmed up to it a bit. And I don't know. I just want to see. I wonder what it's going to take success-wise for him to stay.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we've been over this a little bit, but we joked about it when he first got traded. Yeah. It's like have fun with your rental player. I mean, I was kind of in the bagwagon of like, you never know, but I definitely understood that. I mean, he came out after he got traded. Obviously it was from frustration from being traded to a team he didn't want to go to, but like his team came out and said that he's not staying in Toronto no matter what, which is awful to hear as a Toronto fan base or even an organization. Like, oh yeah, we just gave up a guy we really liked who loved it here, and we told him we weren't going to trade him, and now this guy doesn't. He's like, I don't care if we win a championship or not, I'm not going to stay. So I mean, hopefully that's not true. If the Raptors can stay healthy and maybe get to the finals, I mean, that I think that would go a long way in endearing Toronto to Kawhi, Toronto to Kawhi, and Kawhi to Toronto. But I mean, that obviously the whole year is going, it's going to be exciting just because we get to see Kawhi Leonard play again, but it's going to be exciting because you know that everything he does is going to in some way relate to his impending free agency.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess moving into my last storyline, it's a little personal. It's the Sacramento Kings. For those who don't know, it's my favorite team. But for once, since I've been a fan, I get to talk about them in a positive light. So the Sacramento Kings have obviously been top three worst franchises in the league the last 10 or so years. But that, for at least right now, looks like there might be some hope in the future. I guess where my storyline lays with them is how their young talent's going to develop, and is their young talent something to build on? So first game, De'Aaron Fox went off. He dropped 21. Willie Cauley-Stein went off, dropped 23. Buddy Hield, 19. And Marvin Bagley, even though he only dropped 6 and 5, he only had 12 minutes. So he played really well. So it definitely looks like, I mean, it is just one game, but I mean, watching from the summer league preseason and everything with at least De'Aaron Fox, that at least De'Aaron Fox looks like he's going to take he's going to take a leap forward, and he's going to be a more efficient, better scorer. He's always going to be good on defense. I guess the biggest thing for them is figuring out their front court, because it's pretty crowded. Like, they got like 4 or 5 dudes that they could realistically start. I mean, I'm all in on the Marvin Bagley train. Like, just start the man, give him his minutes. I mean, he proved in 12 minutes. He got 6 points, 5 rebounds, shooting 50%, I think it was. So give him more minutes for sure. I feel like him and Willie Cauley-Stein will be a really good 4 and 5. If Willie Cauley-Stein ever decides to take the next leap that he keeps flirting with, he's like, there's been multiple times where I thought he'd take the next leap, but then he just doesn't. But, I mean, definitely with the pieces that he has around him, I feel like it's more likely that he will. So, so De'Aaron Fox looks like he's going to take the leap. Willie Cauley-Stein looks like he's going to take some sort of leap. Marvin Bagley looks like he's going to be good. And Buddy Hield is Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield's always going to get buckets. So,
Buddy buckets.
Yeah. It's definitely looking up for me, personally. So I'm just watching, seeing how this is going to pan out, I guess.
Yeah, obviously I'm not focused on the Kings as much as you, but I think there's things to be excited about. I mean, Will Cauley-Stein has the makeup to step forward and at least fill like a Clint Capella kind of role if he can get some distributors, which it seems like they have developing in De'Aaron Fox, and now they signed Yogi Ferrell too, which I actually liked.
Yeah, he's been playing good too.
Yeah, and so I mean, he obviously doesn't have to step up and be the guy, because that's what De'Aaron Fox and now Bagley are going to eventually do. We'll see how Marvin Bagley's minutes get distributed. 6 and 5 in 12 minutes in the first game, so I mean, that's pretty solid. They played Will Cauley-Stein almost 40 minutes against the Jazz. And I mean, for me at least, that's big. Playing 38 minutes against the Jazz and you lose by 6 because Donovan Mitchell goes off at the end of the game. That's huge. You're playing Rudy Gobert, the best defensive center in the league, in my opinion. And Cauley-Stein dropped like 23. So, I mean, there is excitement. There's excitement to be had in Sacramento, and whether it's the top picks or picks from a few years back that are finally coming around, a lot to look forward to on the Kings right now.
Yeah. I mean, obviously nothing like the playoffs or anything, but, seeing some development and, hoping
just a direction. Team,
goes in the right direction. I mean, there's a lot of bust. I don't know how to say it, but there's a lot of bust potential. Yeah, there it is. There's a lot of bust potential with dudes specifically like Marvin Bagley, but the way they've been playing has definitely me smiling a little bit. So.
Yeah, it's a good start. And so I guess as we talk about bust potential. See, I'm always out here finding these segues. My number two storyline is Markelle Fultz.
Ooh.
And I mean, I said I could have segued to this one on the piece about the East as well, just because we're talking about the Sixers and how their team does, and I think that their ceiling is really dependent on if Markelle Fultz can get back to being the player that he was drafted to be. And if he can, obviously the 76ers get infinitely better.
Yeah.
But I mean, he missed basically the whole year last year, broken shooting form. He forgot how to shoot jumpers. He supposedly shot like 100,000 shots in the summer, whatever, to fix his shot. He still seemed timid in the preseason, though. I mean, this is a guy that was a number one overall pick, UW alum. Go Dogs. But I mean, he followed the trend of the 76ers draft picks sitting out a year for injury. But unlike Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, he sat out and supposedly forgot how to play basketball, I guess. So, I mean, I'm nervous for him. I mean, I want the dude to succeed, and I want the 76ers to succeed just because I think they're a fun infusion of young talent into the league. But I think a lot of it's going to be predicated on, can Markelle Fultz get back to being the kind of player he was in college, and does he have the mental fortitude to get back to being a ruthless shot taker, and have that mentality. And I don't know if he does after when your shot's claimed as broken and you seem like you've forgotten how to shoot. I think it's really hard to say, I'm going to just go back to being balls to the wall, I'm going to get buckets for my team mentality, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd have to disagree with you a little bit, because Markelle Fultz does everything besides shooting at the level, if not a higher level, as he did when he got drafted. He still attacks the basket with ruthless aggression, finishes at the rim, can pass, can rebound, can play defense. He just can't, like, I guess it's not that he can't shoot right now, because his shot does look a lot better. It's just, like you said, it's less of a mentality of doing everything. It's just more the mentality of taking more jump shots. Like, he was 1-for-3 in the first game from three. The one that he made, it was a little awkward because he went right-left and shot, which is really weird, instead of going left-right to shoot. But, I mean, everything upstairs looked pretty fluid, besides his footwork on that weird shot. But, and I guess another part where I disagree with you is, I don't think the Sixers really need him to be that elite-level player to succeed. Especially if he doesn't get his jump shot back, I think he'd be really good off the bench for them, creating offense and playing lockdown defense, especially if they're able to keep a dude like J.J. Redick. I think it was really weird having Markelle start over J.J. Redick, since you got Ben Simmons and Markelle, who can't shoot, and then Embiid, he gets space to the floor as a center, but, I mean, he's not like an Al Horford type shooting center, I guess I would say. So I think that was really weird. But Markelle Fultz developing definitely is going to take the Sixers somewhere, but I don't think it's all that they're leaning on.
I don't think that at all either. I think that Markelle Fultz is the in order for the 76ers, in my opinion, to become better than the Raptors or better than the Celtics, I guess the Raptors are to be determined, but I still believe that they're going to be really good. In order to take the next step and be above them, they either need Markelle Fultz to play at a star level and form the big three that they originally thought they were going to have, or they need to trade for a superstar. And so, no, I believe that they can be successful. I think they will be a top four seed for sure in the East.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think that they're going to get out of the second round or come out of the East without Markelle Fultz playing at a high level, I mean, it doesn't have to be elite, but a high level, or them acquiring a superstar.
Yeah, no, I don't really think they need a superstar. I feel like the way the Sixers are set up, I feel like they'd definitely be better off with, like, an OKC situation where they had Russ and KD, like, as their superstars, like, really doing a lot of carrying the team, and then they had James Harden off the bench. I feel like that's definitely the mold that the Sixers should try to go for.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it as well. And I don't know. I believe that Markelle Fultz is going to step up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be a wait and see. I'm just kind of worried about his mentality as a shooter. And I mean, it is going to be his rookie season, basically. So, I mean, does teams basically just daring him to shoot jumpers bite them in the butt? Or does it get in the head of Markelle Fultz?
Yeah. I don't know. I hope it does bite him in the butt. Because, I mean, he did shoot 3 threes, and he made one in the season debut against the Celtics, which is a really good defensive team, if not the best defensive team in the league. But, yeah, I mean, his shot looks fluid besides his footwork. So, I mean, I think it's less of his shoulder now and just more of getting back into the shooting mindset.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I agree. Honorable mention, I guess we should say, to the Jimmy Butler saga.
Yeah, yeah, I thought about putting that in, but I feel like we covered that already.
Yeah, like we can't. Like I couldn't honestly put Jimmy Butler in there and act like we weren't going to talk about him at least once a week anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, but, I mean, he played though. So well, yeah. He tried to carry him to a win over the Spurs. Oh, I guess the Spurs could be another honorable mention with DeMar DeRozan and the new Spurs legion of DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge, and seeing if they can make it 22 in a row, which I'm sure they can. But
yeah, I guess honorable mention for me too, the Suns, kind of the same situation as the Kings, but I feel like they have more proven players. Devin Booker's proven. I feel like DeAndre Ayton, it's going to be hard for him to be a bust. So I feel like they're just more, they're better set up. There wasn't as much to talk about there.
Yeah, dude, Ayton had a monster preseason. He's like averaging like 18 and 11. But yeah, I guess we kind of dragged on a little bit here at the end. So I just want to say thanks everybody for tuning in to another week of And Big Red vs. the World.
Yep. Hopefully I won't be in the closet next week, but you never know.
Out of the closet.
All right, bye guys.